Well, I mean, I can start by giving you the conventional story. Ted was going to give a sort of unconventional story. So
let's start with conventional. That sounds good.
So the conventional story. Okay, so we can consider black holes in ADS. So we just think of ordinary Schwarzschild. There's actually several kinds of black holes in space-time with negative cosmological constant, but I'll be considering the usual spherical ones, not ones with different symmetries. And now it turns out that if you take a black hole with a Schwarzschild radius bigger than the ADS radius, then those black holes never evaporate. They Hawking radiate a bit. If the Schwarzschild radius is bigger than the ADS radius, the black hole comes into thermal equilibrium with its own Hawking radiation. And it can stay there for, I won't say forever, because there's all these really rare events where the black hole suddenly sort of spews out all of the universe of Hawking radiation. But it's basically in stable equilibrium. So that's something which we don't have in asymptotically flat space times, and it's not but it's a new feature of ADS because it's like a confining box. But black holes which are just a little bit smaller than the ADS radius also don't Hawking evaporate, contrary to some. Anyway, you need the Schwarzschild radius to really be much less than the ADS radius in order to find that you can completely evaporate without decreasing the entropy. So, you just compare the entropy of the black hole with the entropy of a gas of the same energy in ADS, and it's easy to see if the black hole is a little bit smaller than ADS, even though it has negative specific heat, it will still come into thermal equilibrium with its own radiation. So if you want to know the whole thing. Sorry, so these black holes have stable equilibrium and positive specific heat. Black holes, which are less than ADS, but not very much less, they have negative specific heat, but they still have stable equilibrium. But black holes, you can get small, bigger than something, much smaller than ADS. Have negative specific heat and completely evaporate.
So what scale would determine that crossover?
This crossover?
Yeah.
It's just some funny power of the ratio of the, it's something like the Schwarzschild radius to the ADS radius. It's,
but that's like n to the minus 2.
Yeah, probably 2 nice. Yeah, in terms of n, if you write this in terms of the gauge theory parameters, it's a negative, it's 1 over n to some fractional power.
So this is the point of view from the microcanonical ensemble.
Microcanonical ensemble, exactly. In terms of the canonical ensemble, of course, these black holes all have temperatures which look like this. So the temperature of the black hole as a function of the Schwarzschild radius does this. ADS radius is in the middle. So black holes in ADS have a minimum temperature. Small black holes are hot, but big black holes are hot also. Okay, so these are the black holes we're going to be interested in. The ones where...
Sorry, because the black hole doesn't evaporate, why does that automatically rule out Bayesian inverses? Where is this?
I'll show you.
But you explain why we're concentrating on the tiny ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Ted might have totally different reasons. I'm just sort of the warm-up act here. Okay, so these black holes would normally be described by a Penrose diagram which looks like this.
Actually, Jerry, are you thinking of those as being 5-dimensional and small or 10-dimensional and small?
Good point. So I am thinking of them as being, well, it doesn't matter too much, except I was hoping to avoid the complications of the 5-sphere. So I was going to think of them as 5-dimensional and small. But you're right to sort of point out that those are unstable.
Right.
Anything which is a small black hole in ADS across a big round 5-sphere is going to have sort of classical instabilities, analog of the so-called Gregory Laplace instability. And what those instabilities are inhomogeneous modes on the 5-sphere basically grow. And the outcome, the final state of that is not really understood yet. So let's ignore, well, we can do two things. We can either ignore it, or we can think of these as 10-dimensional small black holes. And I don't think the discussion I'm going to give doesn't really change. So we have the whole space time is supposed to be this, well, we have 10 dimensions, and in this big 10-dimensional space, you can certainly put little tiny 10-dimensional black holes. Just put them down anywhere. So they're localized on the 5-sphere, they're also localized in these other 5-8.
So they're localized in the 5-sphere.
They're localized on the 5-sphere. Okay, so these could be small and
small. Solutions are normal, localized in the 5-sphere.
Not completely analytically. What did we do, Veronica? So we did something. I mean, we matched, I guess. I mean, certainly near the black hole, you expect it to look like 10-dimensional Schwarzschild. Far away, it looks like ADS5 process 5.
They're not destabilized by the fluxes. There should be a consistent solution which reduces the extent of black holes and the flux.
So this is like close to its extremal 10-dimensional black holes. I'm supposed to get the middle range of the black holes that are extremal?
No, these are neutral black holes. So there's no charge on the black hole. The flux that Veronica was just talking about is the five-form flux that sort of supports the whole thing in the first place. So there's, you know, the fact that we have an ADS5 process 5 solution is not because there's a fundamental cosmological constant in string theory, but it's because we have this five-form field which has some non-zero value proportional to
the But this is just the 10-dimensional analog of the Patty-Robinson.
That's right. So this is the sort of extreme or the near horizon limit of these free brains, but then we're putting little black holes in this throat region. So the idea is we want to put little Schwarzschild black holes in here.
Oh, okay.
All right, so the question for today is, okay, so we have this space-time, which looks roughly like this. This is the origin, r equal to 0. This is infinity, r equal to infinity. Formal boundary is time-like for negative cosmological constant. And this would be the usual story for an evaporating black hole. The black hole gets very small, and this is the origin again here. And so we want to know whether things that fall into a black hole can escape in some sort of baby universe that sort of branches off from the inside of the black hole. Now, the standard argument, for why this doesn't happen or can't happen, is the following. Let's suppose we had some initial state here. So we start with some state. Psi, the initial state here. If this happens, you could imagine that you have some pure state which now, you know, a pure state, if you include both the baby universe and this external region, but if you only have access to this external region, then you have to have a mixed state. So the state here would not be a pure state, this would be a mixed state.
Ed is warming up for you.
Oh, hi, Ted. Right, great. So, I'm just giving the conventional story, and then you can give the, you know, the alternative. So, okay, so if baby universes were branching off, it would look to an observer in this asymptotically ADS region as if some pure state is evolving to a mixed state.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is that we have ADS-CFT. So ADS-CFT now says that everything that's happening in this asymptotically ADS space-time should be describable by some dual ordinary non-gravitational field theory. So that this whole process of the black hole formation and evaporation should be some describable by a unit, well, by an ordinary, i.e. unitary evolution in the dual field theory.
But this is an argument that either this doesn't happen or there are exceptions to ADS-CFT.
Or that the evolution is very slow.
Or that what?
The CFT describes the baby.
Or the CFT describes the baby universe as well, somehow.
Well, then it would have to be unit. That would have to be a unitary process.
But the problem, I mean, I'm going to stop in a minute and let Ted start, because he's... But I mean, the problem I see with imagining that the field theory describes the baby universe also is if you can go way up here, you know, over here, you might say, okay, well, you know a little bit about it. But way up here, these are just two completely disconnected, you know, regions of space-time. The CFT sort of lives on the boundary here, so we sort of has access to this. But why should it know anything about what's happening in some totally disconnected region of space-time?
But don't you already know that the CFT describes a sub-orbital geometry from this information, those calculations? What there's still radius and there's the black hole.
Okay. It does, look, it's a quantum theory. The CFT, the dual CFT is a quantum theory. So it's dual to the full quantum theory in the bulk. And this is just some sort of semi-classical approximation. But surely it could get contributions from more than one geometry in the bulk. So we can imagine that you need to sum over geometries. But maybe it's Ted's turn.
Just a second.
But another thing could also happen is people are saying that, well, ADS, CFT just captures the physics outside the horizon, so doesn't capture the physics inside the horizon. And let me start at a very naive level.
Yeah.
A very naive level would be that, you know, for a cosmological context, if I just use, as when he does in relativity or so on, log scale factor as being time. And so on, and there's a perfect unitary evolution in the relativity theory. But it's just that, and because singularity is really just sent to this, the new time t equal to minus infinity, or plus infinity, if it becomes something. And so you might actually get, you know, perfectly unitary evolution, but that doesn't really mean that what you're describing, the interior space-time geometry, is all perfectly fine. So we need some kind of real observables, and we want to need something to really test what is going on. And so why could something like this not happen here? That you get a perfectly unitary evolution there. And what it is telling you is something like, well, I mean, kind of that ADS time going to infinity just approaches a particle approaching the horizon or approaching the singularity. For example, choice of time.
Yeah, well, it is true that the natural time in the dual field theory is the sort of, is like an external Schwarzschild time. At least asymptotically, sort of gauge for carrying in. So for an eternal black hole, one that's not going to evaporate, we have infinite time on the boundary for the field theory, which is naturally correlated with the asymptotic Schwarzschild time here. Now, people have discussed this, and I think we're going to hear next week about attempts to see inside the horizon using this the dual field theory. But I mean, one argument that this is not just describing physics outside is that from the bulk, there's clearly more than the physics outside. You know, observers can fall in. So the boundary theory, though, as Steve emphasized, is a complete theory in the sense that it's self-contained. You know, you don't have any, you have to be able to add something to this sort of N=4 super Yang Mills theory, new degrees of freedom somehow, describing what observers have fallen in with C in a way that made it consistent.
Maybe horizon is this argument at this horizon, but it could be just time is going up to infinity at singularity itself. You know, what was, so you recover this space-time, but you don't know what is happening.
Okay, so you could have t equals infinity approaching here, but then there's a problem here, because you know any surface here can't be connected to here by a space-like curve. Right? You could do it for, you know, initially, but then up here you can't connect to the space-like curve. The curves would have to go down and then up in some way. So that's why this is a more
Maybe you do it. I'm just saying that maybe having unitary evolution there doesn't tell me anything necessarily.
I understand, but I think the issue of a baby universe. I mean, while this is sort of something we could debate, you know, maybe that these time slices really do go in here, and that's all there is to it. So a baby universe is a more dramatic thing, which is harder to reconcile with this idea of baby universe.
So you might say that, well, it is perhaps possible that sort of space actually takes up in some bits there, something happens, but not the whole macroscopic baby universe. Is that what you're saying? When you say we don't understand that region, what do you mean?
This region here?
Yeah. Well, possibility that we don't understand that even if you march up to that infinite time on the boundary, we are really sort of just approaching this. The singularity. So you said that's possible.
Well, this is an active area of research right now, trying to probe this singularity inside black holes by some sort of feature of the CFD. And so we'll hear more about that.
There's a killing vector in that geometry. It's not like you're approaching the singularity from that time, really. It's really, things are uniform along that vertical line.
They're uniform along this direction.
I meant outside.
Outside.
I mean, in that time it's not like scale factor time approaching a big crunch or something. Now, outside time is
I just want to know that outside time might be kind of logarithmic, some other related to the time which is marching up there, up to the singularity.
Well, if there's a killing vector, it can't be marching toward anything. I mean, right, that's what I mean. So outside time is, maybe I misunderstood. The outside time is.
No, I'm not worrying about outside time. I'm talking about whether the CFT description, which is here the outside time, that time marching up to infinity, it could in principle happen that just describes the physics until you sort of reach the singularity. And there's some new physics near the singularity which is not captured.
Then the black hole would take forever to sort of form and evaporate, right? Because the black hole is a localized thing. When you're out at infinity, and you only see the thing.
It's localized not in space. It's localized in space.
Sorry, I thought that this discussion was in the context of these eternal black holes. Is that right, Alfie? Or you're still asking about the evaporating black hole?
I wanted to focus. I don't know if Pettit wants to. I thought that this was a sharper question. And the question of, we could ask, do baby universes branch off from here also? Right. But this, I think,
For this purpose, I agree. That's sharp.
This is a sharp.
So at late times, there the CFT would seem to be a complete description only of the outer universe. It has just the right number of degrees of freedom to describe the outer universe, and the CFT is still in a pure state. Because it has a Hamiltonian.
The CFT evolves a pure state here to a pure state here.
Because the outside there is just asymptotic radius space-time. It's the same as the initial state. Mm-hmm.
This is an ordinary copy of ADS, a full copy of ADS up here.
Right.
An origin, asymptotic region, and the field theory here seems to describe everything happening here. It doesn't seem to have extra degrees of freedom to describe what's happening in some other disconnected.
Unless there's just one state allowed there.
Right, so Eve, I think, might talk later this afternoon about some ideas that, if there's a unique state here, then that's not, we wouldn't call it a baby universe, I think.
I'm not saying that would happen with a baby universe involved.
Writing a Kant's diagram, kind of taking a meta-observer viewpoint of the space-time, and there's no reason that should be right. I mean, from the point of view of any different local observer, I don't think there's any obvious contradiction.
We could just ask, when is a semi-classical metric well defined? we do that in general relativity all the time. If we write down the full metric, even though, you know, observers might only see part of it.
Dave's suggesting another alternative, which is an analog of Eve, is a bit different, in the sense that he says, well, maybe that there is, in fact, an interior baby universe, but it describes the same degrees of freedom that there are outside.
Complementarity.
Oh, complementarity.
Some other is classical limit of the same quantum theory or something.
You get a contradiction only if someone can kind of see the outgoing Hawking radiation and then jump in and see the state again.
Well, and see some dramatic contradictions. What would that actually happen?
Well, let me try again. I mean, this is again from the point of view of the discussion we had during Steve's talk. I mean, if there's you know, an ADS CFT theorem whose assumptions apply in this case, then, you know, I'm supposed to give up. But instead there's an ADS CFT correspondence. You know, it's not clear to me anyway what the limits of that correspondence are. And so what is it that gives us confidence that it applies in this case? Why couldn't this be a case where it doesn't apply? What is it that gives us confidence that, you know, this particular case of the collapsing, evaporating black hole is one to which, you know, the ideas of the ADS CFT correspondence are supposed to apply?
Well, perhaps a better way to phrase that would be to say that if you allow for the CFT to describe any state and Hamiltonian evolution to be valid for any given state, it seems arbitrary that this particular state doesn't evolve in a unitary fashion.
Well, but this is what I'm asking. Do we have this overwhelming confidence that the ADS CFT correspondence applies to every single state? Or do we think, well, you know, maybe this works in some limited set of circumstances, but not in others?
The point that Steve has been making, that any theory of gravity, not just string theory, should define a CFT because, you know, the same dictionary should define a boundary Hamiltonian, and therefore there should be a boundary field theory whose evolution is unitary. Why does that not follow?
You could imagine
the EM construction gives you a Hamiltonian.
But it could be negative. There could be negative metric stuff, or
You say there could. You say it doesn't.
Yeah,
have,
I think it's not.
But I thought it was second argument was field game. I thought that this other argument, which is just repeat
the water,
to say that the boundary theory is a complete theory.
Yes, right.
And in fact, it doesn't apply in this particular case. Then whatever correct theory is, we'll have to have some. So whatever the correct theory is, we'll have to have, you know, some ingredients which you can just add on the top of this theory, and that seems plausible. Not it's an intuitive argument.
Okay. But where I was going to, too, was, I mean, there's this, it's controversial, but there's the old Banks, Peskin, Susskind argument that information loss is inconsistent in any theory of quantum gravity. And I was going to try to use what I thought was Steve's argument as a way to try to make that argument, that any theory of gravity defines a Hamiltonian evolution in the boundary and therefore can't lose information.
Yeah, maybe the way it would work is the Hamiltonian of a theory that lost information would not be bounded below. Or something like that. Inevitably,
it's not below. Is it question is interesting? I didn't realize it was an issue.
Yeah, I don't know a way, at least from an arbitrary theory of quantum gravity, to tell that the Hamiltonian is unitary in a positive metric Hilbert space.
It could also just be like a symmetric but not self-adjoint operator, something like you have on the positive half line.
That's right.
Quantum mechanics with no boundary condition. It's not unitary. It mixes with the negative half line.
That's right. I think that. That would be the kind of abstract way of testing these different theories of quantum gravity, what sort of way they're realized in this thing.
I can see that every theory of quantum gravity in the bulk defines some CFT, but is it clear that the CFT then has to capture everything in the bulk, that it has to be equivalent?
If it's a complete theory?
No.
That was the subject of the debate.
But even if it doesn't, it has unitary evolution in and of itself. Right. And your picture would say it doesn't because it eventually sees a mixed state.
It's not my picture. Picture on the board.
Well, for instance, suppose you took this internal situation and you tried to construct a CFT from the correlators.
Right.
You would find that, you know, that you'd be finding a mixed state somehow.
But it could just be there are degrees of freedom you haven't thought of yet.
Right. Yeah. So, but just looking at the correlators on the boundary that's handed to you.
No, but you're assuming you know all the degrees of freedom.
That's right. And that assumption. Right. Right. So that's an extra thing you have to test.
But I was going to ask, whatever happened to alpha parameters?
This wasn't supposed to work even, I mean, it wasn't supposed to lead to information loss even if it happened.
Good old alpha parameters. All right, alpha parameters, now remind me, this is something which I thought of for small little baby universes that could sort of branch off from anywhere.
Well, but if I take a big enough coarse graining, it should apply to this as well.
Exactly, yeah, if you look at the sort of effective theory on scales large as compared to the black hole formation and evaporation scales, then you should have what amounts to an alpha. Well, this kind of effective description that ends up with the alpha parameter story.
But that would mean that baby universe could reconnect to the.
Yeah, that's the baby universe would have to be. You don't need reconnection here to get alpha parameters, right?
Maybe, I mean, in light of the pedagogical nature of this, we should have somebody, you know, explain and say a little bit about what alpha parameters are. But I'm also sort of would like Ted to have his, you know, 5 minutes of fame or something. You were the one who thought, I mean, I had this up last Monday, crossed it out and said it's clearly wrong, and you said no, you believed that this was the way things were. So I want you to at least say a few words about why you think this is not inconsistent with ADS-CFT.
Not necessarily
inconsistent.
Okay, I'll just make. Well, I didn't really want to deflect from where it was going in an interesting way. This discussion.
We'll come back to alpha parameters.
It's a new topic.
Okay. That's a new topic.
Okay, so the first thing I guess I want to say is I'm not even sure I understand why. What if in ADS-CFT there wasn't a branch off like this at all? I think this was almost mentioned. But it was like you form a black hole by collapse, and then it just stays there. It doesn't evaporate away completely. I guess this would be a remnant of some kind
just a big black hole.
Well, no, I don't want it to be eternal. It formed at some time. There's no white hole singularity here. It was formed by collapse. If I drew it in usual boundary conditions, it would just, asymptotically flat black hole forms from collapse, doesn't go away, it looks like that. It might even shrink for a while. Mm-hmm. As long as something is left, this is what the Penrose diagram I draw. So
but anything but these absurdly tiny ones would have a Penrose diagram like this.
Yeah. Hmm. A lot of black holes in ADS do that. They evaporate a little bit and then they reach the equilibrium.
So, you know, just so thinking about this, one question that occurred to me is just, so what I find the most interesting question in a way is to say, well, look, there's all this evidence for ADS-CFT. Let's suppose it's true and figure out could it be compatible with information being, you know, hidden behind a horizon. For example, a baby universe. But another possibility is simply this. Can you guys in ADS-CFT land rule out the idea that in the quantum gravity theory that the CFT describes, this is the relevant Penrose diagram?
So meaning what? This thing evaporates down, and then what happens? That it just leaves a remnant?
It gets stuck. Yeah,
behind a Planck size remnant.
Maybe. Yeah. String size remnant.
Yeah. What about an ADS size remnant? Is that okay with you?
No, because it won't evaporate. I mean, you're starting with something smaller than ADS.
Well, yeah, you're saying it doesn't even evaporate.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Okay. There's another possibility. Hawking effect is incorrect, and it does. But just as a category, though, I'm just saying that there is no.
Yeah, but there is a question for the small ones. If you form it, it will evaporate. And the question is what happens?
It'll begin to evaporate if semi-classical quantum gravity.
All I'm saying is there's a situation where we would all agree that that's the Penrose diagram in some approximation, which is if you throw in enough matter to make a black hole that's bigger than the ADS radius.
Okay, then, so let's suppose that we are looking
then
at
semi-classically, well, yeah. That thing comes into equilibrium and doesn't evaporate.
Right.
We wouldn't use the word remnant, but I think there's no question that in some approximation that's dependent.
And I think most people would agree that the information inside the horizon should be accessible to the outside of CFT. It's not clear exactly what we're going to hear some talks about how to do that.
Right. So one, it seems to me like one resolution could be sort of you don't get into this question. The actual quantum gravity theory described by.
But I think that's totally different. I mean, yeah. I think your first statement about this is totally consistent with ADS-CFT.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. I'm looking for ways a black hole formation and evaporation can be consistent with ADS-CFT without denying the fact that not all information is accessible outside the horizon.
Well, then you get into the usual anti-remnant arguments.
Right, which we can debate about. That would be an issue. I never bought those, but. Look, okay, let me make a second point now. It seems to me that I don't understand what's so different between an observable here and an observable here from the point of view of ADS-CFT. So if I have an observable here, if you allow me to think of this as field theory on a background, since I've drawn it that way anyway, and so in some approximation I'm talking about a situation where I have some idea of a classical geometry. I can use field equations to express this field operator, whatever it is, in terms of some integral over field operators on some earlier slice, before the black hole ever formed, as far back as you want. Nobody would doubt that whatever that operator is here, it's dual to some operator in the CFT. So whatever this observable is, it seems to me that I don't know how anybody could possibly imagine that's not something that's described by the CFT. But now, what's the big deal about just going across this wiggly line?
A curvature, among other things.
Okay, but okay, so that's just that I don't, you know, you guys have told me how to handle that. Just do the follow the CFT evolution. So this leads me to the point of view that it's simply inevitable that in the CFT is a description of this observable here. Whatever it is.
Either that or that crunch bang just doesn't happen. It's still possible.
Time could end
then. Well, that's,
it's not the same time that you have at the boundary, so I'm not even sure why you say that I can, by evolution, go from your line there. It's not like time evolution on the boundary.
But this is some kind of evolution.
It's some kind of evolution. Yeah. That's
right, but the boundary series, you describe right evolution.
Actually, I have no even objection to the conjecture that that it simply stops here. In other words, that the way the CFT resolves the quantum gravity singularity is to say there's actually an edge in space-time. This local evolution that I'm talking about here does not continue. And I don't see any logical problem with that either. However, that does imply that if I then look at late times out here, at the set of all possible local observables in this region, they will not be enough to span the space of observables in the CFT, and the state will appear mixed if I only probe it with these observables. That is, if I look for the maximum entropy state that's consistent with the value of all of these observables, it will have entropy, it will not be pure, because we know that it's correlated, I've messed up my diagram too much, it's correlated to what's behind here. So really, whether this continues or not is not the important question, I think, as far as the issue of unitarity is concerned.
But if there's just one state there, that would be
If it ends and there's a universal state there, then there's no information loss. Then that thing is not symmetric.
Well, okay, but
of course, I don't know how you have to explain what's wrong with Hawking's argument with the semi-classical picture.
So basically, I've stated everything I can state about my point of view. You can then talk about it. I've discussed, you know, can you guys rule this out somehow? Do we know enough about the CFT to say that there are no such observables? But it seems to me that from what I said that you can't possibly do that, because if you're gonna wind up concluding that the CFT can't describe bulk evolution.
Yeah, but Ted, you're assuming that point inside the horizon cannot be described by ordinary CFT observables.
No, I'm not. I'm asserting that it can be.
But if it is, then it's part of the usual story. So why is there entropy at late times?
Because in this situation, if we have entanglement between degrees of freedom inside and outside the horizon, then the state restricted to the outside, which is all that's probable by these set of observables, will appear mixed. It's only by probing the a bigger class of observables that I can verify that this state is pure. If you take a pure state and you have only, let me state, this is maybe not obvious, but take a pure state and restrict the, and if you take all the observables in the entire Hilbert space, you can verify that it's pure. But if you have some subset, then in effect the state may as well be mixed for you, and you can define the entropy as the entropy, the minimum entropy state that's, sorry, the maximum entropy state that's compatible with all the values of all those observables. That's what. So if this is not a complete set, then it's not unitary.
Well, one argument against this picture is that this situation you're starting out with, you're throwing some finite mass in. That's essentially, that's a finite entropy state. And the
could be pure.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe it's a pure state, but regardless, I think there's reason to think that after a very long time, there's going to be a recurrence, and you're going to get back to that initial configuration.
Okay, this is it. Why I think you're thinking that the black hole might form, evaporate, the stuff that comes out will fall.
I'm just saying from the field theory point of view.
Yeah, but that may not be describable by some semi-classical geometry.
No, it may not. I'm just saying at some much later time, you're going to be back to the original field theory state.
Close or arbitrarily.
Or arbitrarily close to the initial field theory state. Mm-hmm. And that would suggest that in some sense, the bulk is going to be back to the initial state. And the evolution between those two won't be semi-classical, but eventually, it'll be back to the original state, which I don't think is compatible with this picture here where it becomes mixed.
This actually touches on the formulation of the unitarity question in the eternal black hole setting. Because what you just said, we could also consider in the case of an eternal black hole background. And I actually agree with you.
There I couldn't make that argument.
Why?
Okay. It's the same thing.
I think that's where it was first made.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Same state, same argument.
I'm not objecting. I'm actually agreeing with you that I think that is really a puzzle. A nice thing about it is it can be posed without thinking about the formation problem. Just take the eternal case. And then indeed it's puzzling. And I was going to ask some string theorists to explain to me what was it that Juan said about that, namely that the partition function in the CFT must in fact contain a sum over topologies. Mm-hmm. Are those topologies relevant to the question of baby universes? What topologies was he talking about? I was hoping that we could.
Well, there was only two. One was the black hole, and one was basically finite temperature ADS.
That's it?
That's all he needed.
So, but this argument does not resolve the paradox.
Yeah.
Yeah, his argument is still semi-classical. It does not resolve the paradox.
Which paradox?
The information
paradox.
Oh, I mean,
it's only really discussing the stationary black holes.
Well, the recurrence, the paradox between the fact that the CFT has recurrences.
That's right. And the bark is on seeds.
Right.
That was what he did resolve, right?
No.
The pure black hole, the correlation functions will continue to decay exponentially. You add in this other piece and it can come back.
Right.
What he showed. Somebody explain that, please.
No, that was discussed by Rabinovich. Company that one's argument failed precisely because of this recurrence.
Oh, really?
So Juan's argument shows that from the supergravity, if you just look at black hole, so you would conclude that the CFT correlation function should decay with time exponentially, and just goes to zero. And from the CFT point of view, because of recurrence, of course, your correlation function can never decay to zero. So it will go to become very small, and then a notch fluctuation can come back. So what Juan showed is that if you include in the bulk some of other topologies, at least you can show the correlation function from summing of the geometry does not always go to zero. But that cannot reproduce the details, say the features of the recurrence. It only shows that the correlation function never decays completely.
Well, you can do something approximately the right size.
That's right, the right side. Yeah, just the minimal size that the boundary correlation function can go to.
So perhaps it needs even more topology.
Right, so the rough picture is the following. So the bulk correlation function is like this. Say, look at some real-time correlation function.
If
you look at some boundary correlation function, say real-time correlation function, So this behaves with time, say like this, we also that we are the more at the beginning, then we'll decay, and then we'll become small as time goes on. And so this time scale is of all the beta. And then we the minimal magnitude of all the exponential minus s, and then we'll maybe not fluctuating will come again at a very long time scale.
Yeah, much longer than that.
Right. Yeah, this time scale is very long.
That time scale is s.
Yeah, that time scale is
that yeah, time so then it starts going like one in either the s.
No, this time scale is all the beta. Yeah, it's all the temperature. It's all the one of the
you don't start seeing the deviation from exponential decay to times of order s.
No, you don't.
E to the s is when the recurrence is of order one.
Right. Let me make it precise. So here, the time scale around here, start decay is all the beta.
Right.
It's all the temperature. And this decay slope is all the beta. And then you could have long time behavior, which is very small. And then at extremely big time, and then you can have large fluctuations.
Right.
So at the minimal magnitude here, so the length here will be exponential order s.
Yes.
And the magnitude here is exponential minus s, just the minimum you can go to. So
and that's achieved at a time of order s.
That's right, yeah. That's true.
But then it stays at that? No, it stops being exponential.
Okay. It's quite the chaotic loss of
yeah. But it only comes back to order 1 at times
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it only comes back at order 1 at very large, it's much larger. And so what Guan shows is that this exponential minus s, this magnitude, you can reproduce from the summing over the other geometry, that's the only thing you can say. That's not the equivalent to the statement of the unitarity.
Actually, I wanted to make a comment. That recurrence I thought might be dependent on the fact that the CFT is taken to be in a pure state, and it seemed to me in the proper interpretation of duality is actually in a mixed state. But then I looked at it last night and it seemed to me that actually the recurrence would happen even if it's...
Right, this mixed state can also happen. As far as the theory have a discrete degrees of freedom, the recurrence can always happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, even in the density.
So I have to say, I mean, my point of view on this is in response to the comment that brought it up, is I actually completely agree that this is the sharpest puzzle and objection that I can see to the point of view that you're trying to maintain. And well, so far as I see no way out of this. I'm still looking, but I see no way out. So I think this is the strongest argument I know of.
Ted, could you articulate, what do you think? I mean, what's your hunch about what's going on? What do you think actually is going on? I missed the story. What do you think happens when the black hole forms and then starts?
Okay, the basic hunch I begin with is what
yeah,
you're asking.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. Just to understand.
It's that evolution has to continue at a singularity because there's a time-like direction there, and even if it's not classical or you know, clump baby universe, it might be a quantum phase of space-time. But I just feel like
and there are real degrees of freedom back there, like more than one. I mean, there's a set of maybe
well, that I think you guys have to agree too.
I just want to know. Just tell me what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. And this complementarity, forget it.
Yeah, no, just
unique state of the singularity of the same.
I'm trying
to.
Just tell me what you think.
Okay.
I'm trying to get you a dialogue here. All right, so what you think a black hole forms, and so like inside the horizon, this singularity or quasi-singularity forms, there's still a lot of degrees of freedom back here. Mm-hmm. They pass through, and then they go into what?
Something we don't know about.
And it stays there. Okay, it never comes back outside the horizon.
This situation we were just discussing makes me wonder about the idea of reconnection. Maybe the way quantum gravity works is that there's an inevitable reconnection.
So that you would, in principle, maybe be open to that?
Sure.
Okay, so, but if there wasn't, then they, so except for that, they would just stay in some other world of baby universe, and then you'd never be able to talk to them again.
Right.
And you'd lose a lot of, there'd be a lot of degrees of freedom back there.
Yeah.
But also, you want to say that happens and this boundary CFT has knowledge of that.
Yeah, that, well, if ADS CFT is right, which I'm quite impressed by all the evidence, yeah, we'd have to have knowledge of that.
So in particular, that would be described by something like a dollar matrix, a superscattering matrix.
On the outside.
Yeah, from the outside. So, okay, so you should be able to derive that dollar matrix if ADS CFT is right from the boundary theory.
Can we have a brief discussion of one of the technical questions here about whether or not the set of observables that we might discuss on the boundary is really a complete set of observables for the space-time? So ADS field theory experts should correct me, but as I understand the ADS CFT story, Ted's scenario where that's a mixed state in this sense of being determined by the local boundary observables can't happen from the ADS CFT. So I would have said the following words. In the CFT, we know what the local observables are. We know what a complete set of observables are. They're all the local deformations of the action you can possibly have in a CFT. And although we don't understand how all of those correspond in detail to things in the bulb, the ADS CFT story is that each of those local deformations of the CFT Lagrangian corresponds to doing something to deform boundary conditions in the bulb, which effectively defines a local operator in the bulb, local in quotes, maybe localized at the boundary. So it seems to me that at least the ADS CFT story is that the kind of observables Ted wanted a sample of there are a complete set of observables in the bulk corresponding to a complete set in the CFT.
Why do they have to be local? I mean, you kept saying local. I mean, they're non-local observables in the boundary theory.
Sorry, I should have been a little, so you're right. To have a complete set in the CFT, we should allow things like Wilson loops that are non-local.
Well, you can expand those.
But you can expand those in the basis, and all of those also correspond to things that are localized, that relate to variations of boundary conditions in the bulk for some kind of string fields.
Not necessarily all the non-local observables can be captured by local correlation functions.
For a CFT, like n equals 4 Yang nulls.
Right.
Am I correct in saying that a complete set of observables should be given by Wilson loops plus local gauge invariants?
Yeah, but why does this contradict that? Because let me just try to say what Ted is saying here. Words in his mouth. So he would say yes. Some of those observables capture information which is kind of in this right hand trousers, mm-hmm. and some of them could capture in the left hand trousers. Or at the capture information about features of singularity, what is happening.
I wanted to address the technical question Ted asked of, is it possible that if you sort of sample physics near the boundary at some time, having started off in a pure state, you might have a mixed state with respect to those observables?
So let's just rephrase it by saying that, well, you sample physics just using observables which are associated with that partial Cauchy surface, which is not the whole Cauchy surface, right? Mm-hmm. Those observables may not be the entire set of observables from CFT. That's what Ted would probably say.
But my point is that I think as we understand the ADS CFT correspondence, those observables are supposed to be the entire set of observables from the CFT. We can enumerate the observables from the CFT and Wilson loops plus local operators, gauge-invariant local operators. And each of those is supposed to correspond to, in some sense, an operator defined by changing the boundary conditions on the boundary of the ADS space.
No. It's not the, it's a state, right? Some of them corresponding to.
I think if there's any lesson from the internal case, there would be another boundary with another CFT, right? And their correlation.
You measure. Let's start with just one CFT for simplicity.
Yeah, and that doesn't apply over there. Well, maybe, I don't know how, but maybe there's another, if this other picture is right, there's another boundary CFT with correlations between the two, just like in the internal case. I don't know how that would happen. The lesson of the internal case is that there are two CFTs. Probes near one boundary is not a complete. Except the CFTs, if you trace over the other boundary, you get a mixed state in the CFT too.
But it's unsensed. You would violate sort of cosmic censorship if you started with one boundary and you created another boundary.
Cosmic censorship isn't a theorem. Anyway, there's negative energy. The time runs the other way on the other side, and there's negative energy over there.
There's simplicity. I would like to discuss the case. It just has one CFT,
yeah, okay.
Which perhaps arguably does not
case,
have three eternal black holes.
This is more like.
Okay, so can I help articulate Don's point? I think I get to see what he's getting at. There may be a response, but I think what you're saying, Don, correct me if I'm wrong. So you're saying basically every observable in the CFT should be expressible as some kind of observable in the bulk, localized near the boundary, but maybe non-local at the boundary. That's number one. You're asserting that, right?
That's ADS CFT as I understand.
Do all the ADS CFT people agree with that?
No, I don't want to commit myself to that.
Okay. Well, that's the premise of Don's point. So if we can't agree on that, we can keep going. So then Don was saying, if that's true.
Just say non-local includes arbitrary long time separation.
Right.
But I don't want to be that not local. We shouldn't have to be.
Does every state in the bulk correspond to a state in the boundary?
Yeah.
Okay, that's.
I would say yes.
What's the resolution of this?
We'll both sign on to it.
The resolution of this bit was that I only wanted to discuss a complete set of observables, not all observables. I want to discuss a set of observables from which you can build all others.
Okay.
And then I can work near a Cauchy surface.
Everybody's happy to.
But how much non-locality in time do you need then? None?
Epsilon, where epsilon is arbitrarily small.
Epsilon.
Particularly, you can build some in terms of local operators.
Steve wants to phrase it in terms of states, a one-to-one map between the states in the boundary and the states in the. In the bulk, but one way to relate the two discussions is there exists. You can create. There is some observable to create any state. Any state can be created by an appropriate observable. Any state can be measured by an appropriate observable. So it's really not so different.
Right. I think Ken's question. By the way, on Don's point.
Well, Ken's question is about observables.
So I think Don's point was the following. So he could answer. He's trying to answer my proposal by saying, sure, if you want to take this observable. Re-express it here, but then re-express that as one of these observables that sort of localized at the boundary, which is equivalent to some field theory observable, and that, by definition, must, since the observables localized at the boundary up here also span all the observables of the field theory, it must also be equivalent to some observable localized at the boundary here, and therefore, and since these every observable in the field theory corresponds to one of these, and these are at the boundary of this bulk, there's no room for any missing observables.
That's the argument. Yeah.
But there is no theorem that this set of observables is complete.
In the CFT?
In the CFT, just as purely a quantum field theory statement. There's no proof that any list of observables is complete.
Well, so if we talk in terms of, but we can then talk in terms of states.
Well, all right, so here's another technical question. You give me a list of observables in the field theory that you're going to construct, operators that you're going to construct in some way. And now we could ask the technical question, if I specify the expectation value in some state of each of those observables, does that determine the state uniquely or not?
Oh, not the expectation value.
Expectation value is enough.
Moments
are on the list of observables to make this.
In any CFT, there must be an operator state correspondence. If there's a unique vacuum, we take an operator.
Good.
So there's an operator. I can think about a complete set of operators. And if there's a spectrum generating algebra, then those are the operators that Tom was talking about. So we know for CFTs that we know very well how to do this. And I think we can do the same thing for any CFT in higher dimensions.
In particular, you could imagine latticizing it, right? And then there's a finite system.
Well, if you think you can latticize a supersymmetric conformal field theory, go right ahead.
You're claiming it is a theorem, so.
There is an operator state correspondence that you can prove quite formally in the context of conformal field theory. Then the question is there a spectrum generating algebra where I can generate all operators by just a certain amount? And then I have the whole system as Don described it. And there you can be quite formal in the conformal field without having to list it. You have many properties that you know about.
But is there a proof that there's a spectrum generating algebra in n equals 4 Yang?
Well, the closest I think you can get is in the limit of zero coupling or something like that. But then you have these words and things that you can go from some operator.
I think they find it helpful.
And just Mark's way is sort of it almost seems like the only logical way out.
Sorry?
It seems like what you just said is the only sort of logical way out.
I think there is a logical way out, but the question is whether it's a, you know, technical loophole that just has never been closed, or whether it's something you can, you know, drive a baby universe.
So Dave, you think that the number, I mean, that this stuff contains information, the number of black holes with a certain energy is larger than the Hawking-Bekenstein entropy. Because you can hide stuff in the universe behind the horizon. Is that a corollary of your hunch?
The number of black holes is larger than the light?
Well, if you assert that the states that can form black holes, there's lots of different ones with the same energy, because you can put extra different differentiating characteristics in the stuff behind the horizon, in the baby universe. So is that's a corollary of what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Okay. Those different things ways you would form the black holes would correspond to different states you took in the CFT.
Well,
initial states.
But I mean, from this bulk picture, it would seem like there would be extra ones that. I'm getting at the question of how much you can hide in this putative baby universe. I mean, are there really extra physical degrees of freedom that can be described there or not?
Extra meaning that aren't in the CFT. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think the way to say it is that if you imagine the black hole as being very small, so the Hawking-Bekenstein entropy would be pretty modest. Mm-hmm. If you believe a baby universe with lots of degrees of freedom can come out of that, then it sounds like there's a lot of entropy in that baby universe in some sense, which is not captured by the Hawking-Bekenstein.
Oh, yeah.
So do you agree with that? That the baby universe can have much more entropy than you see from the horizon?
Sure.
Oh, okay. But
entropy is a measure of the number of...
Okay, that's a clear...
That makes it sure.
That makes it.
How would you ever access those different states? I mean, what would you do to go from one of those states to another one?
I don't know. But just clarify this, because so I think that given assumptions behind Don's argument, right? The statement is that you agree that if you obliterate CFT, then the state will not be mixed state there. And therefore, if you have to have baby universe, then it's not compatible with CFT.
Well, at least it can't have new degrees of freedom.
Okay, cannot have new degrees.
Well, it seems I can't even have, the Sharpe statement is that it can't be true, that the bulk observables long after the black hole evaporated must form, in fact, a complete set for the CFT, must be dual to a complete set for the CFT.
Okay, and if that happens, okay, so let's suppose that that is kind of a fuzzy line, although it's a dissenter statement.
Yeah. Well, if that is the case, then
I mean, all the questions that Steve was just asking are in a different ballpark. Now we just forget about CFT, because if you bring it in, then this can't happen.
Right.
And now, just to clarify the concept, and now he's saying that, well, yeah, so forget about any safety, what could in principle happen? Could we actually have a baby universe which has lots of big freedom, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I've been wondering about a possibility that there might be quite a different ABS-CFT. As we argued on general grounds that if you're in an anti-de-Sitter vacuum, that the boundary correlators describe some kind of CFT. But it's possible there's another kind of conformal field theory with an infinite entropy or something. You know, just not one that we know about, that could correspond to a very different realization of quantum gravity. I mean, that strikes me as the only sort of loophole. If you use the CFTs we know about, then I think you're cooked. But, you know, maybe there's another CFT that describes another possible kind of quantum gravity. That strikes me as the only out that I know about.
Martin and Abed have got this picture of ordinary black hole evaporation in which the singularity never really forms, and they just step right through it, right? And there's only the conformal structure isn't changed. So is there any reason that wouldn't work in this ADS context, in which case you could preserve the correspondence because there wouldn't be any sort of separate baby universe.
The question there is, when does the information actually come out? And
you think
I don't know, because that tells you
when the information comes out.
Well, no, for this picture to be right, you've got to ask the question, when does the information come out? And depending on when it comes out, you're going to get into one of the standard problems. Either if it comes out early, you've got to somehow violate locality to get it out early. Or if it comes out late, after the black hole's evaporated down to the Planck size, then you're back in the remnant scenario, which is, it has its set of problems. So that's one question you can try to answer to try to evaluate this proposal up there.
Well, let's just look more at
it. Yeah, ignoring that,
would it fit in there?
Yes, I don't see any problem with this sort of picture that you form something which just gets highly curved, quantum mechanical, but keeps going, and you don't have any sort of squiggly line or any boundary there. Then globally, in some sense, it just looks like ADS, and ADS CFT would work just fine.
No, it's not a problem.
Well, hence Steve's problem.
You have a problem with understanding the effective field theory description of that in the bulk language.
There's a potential problem of understanding the effective field theory, but it's my confusion basically. Don, Steve, and I are talking about this. Is I don't understand the way that one's calculating the way that information comes out. I agree that it's a well-defined calculation, but I don't know what it is telling me physically. I don't trust that. It's obvious what it is telling me physically. So that's where to, and it could be that there is actually non-locality. That's another thing that I don't. The question is, what scale is there non-locality? And so that one is to look at. I'm not particularly surprised if it's non-locality.
But I mean, you have to draw the Penrose diagram differently if you're going to say that you behave that way. What you basically say is there are no black holes, and therefore the Penrose diagram is just the Penrose diagram of flat space. It's just that there happens to be a region of high curvature where things hang around for a while because they get sucked in and stay there for a while before they get expelled. But it's a much simpler Penrose diagram.
I agree that it's a different and simpler Penrose diagram, but I should two things that I don't agree with, that there's no black hole that I don't agree with, because there are horizons. Trap surfaces form. It depends on how you define black hole. I mean, you can't talk about event horizon, but we can't talk about event horizon anytime there is a quantum geometry somewhere.
Things don't get trapped forever. They just get sucked in, stay up a while, and then go out.
Sure.
And that's what happens in flat space if you have a region with a strong but not infinite gravitational field.
Is the semi-classical radiation almost thermal?
Yeah, semi-classical radiation is almost thermal.
Yeah, that's where the interesting question is, when you start to see the deviations from thermality, and in particular, whether the information comes out after this thing is evaporated down to a Planck-sized remnant, or whether it's coming out, say, halfway through the evaporation of the black hole. Those are very different stories in trying to evaluate them in a semi-classical point of view.
But there's also this other picture which somehow is never discussed in, so I'd like to understand from string theory, which people like. This is Samir Mathur and other people have, which is that in fact is a long string. That also should probably work in the ADS context as well.
I think that picture is very similar to what we just said, that you have some set of pure states, and the evolution will just algorithmically mix them. So you always stay either in a single pure state, or if you average, you algorithmically mix over them.
Yeah, but I would like to sort of have a little bit of understanding. Why is that not an obvious solution to anything? From string perspective, so what are the limitations?
It's only understood very near the extremal limit.
All of the
questions, the sharp questions, or at least there is a sharp question, which is what happens in the Schwarzschild limit, so to speak, where you've got neutral black holes that you're forming that are fairly big.
Okay, but let's talk about not extremal, but near extremal ones. And so in that case, is this kind of perfectly viable thing, or are there still big doubts about it, or what's the general?
I would say there's still big doubts, because it's a very, I don't think it's quite what you're saying. Samir is saying that pure states don't form black holes, that a pure state necessarily has some sort of non-singular description everywhere, and you only get a black hole description when you're averaging over lots of microstates. And there are, there's a large number of non-singular geometries which have been found, which sort of, can be candidates for these things, but not nowhere near enough. And so I think people like me are taking a wait-and-see attitude. I mean, people are being pretty clever in finding new solutions. And if there's enough found, then, well, we'll have to accept, yes, there's one non-singular sort of interior geometry for every microstate, and we could, you know, have to believe that that's the way string theory works. But at the moment, there's not enough solutions to sort of justify that.
It looks like he's describing a spectrum of sort of gravitational solitons that aren't really usual kind of black holes. At least that's sort of my perception.
So I just wanted to say one of the conceptual issues with his story is that usually the way he answers some of the questions Steve had raised about information and so forth and dependent on the single classical solutions is he will say that there is some kind of large non-locality that can come in even at this, say, the radius of astrophysical black holes. And one of the conceptual questions there is, if that is present in some theory, first of all, what's the detailed mechanism for it? But second of all, if it is present, what contains it? What keeps everything from being non-local? How does local physics, in fact, get reproduced in more familiar circumstances? So.
Okay, well, it's after 1, and we have another talk at 2. So I propose we stop and thank everybody.